It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 244 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of Brett Urin, creator of the Torso Bear series of books. And he's got a third volume in the works and a Kickstarter happening this week that you can help support. We talk about how all the different volumes came to be and how you can access them as well. Because I really love the audio section he did for his second volume on Kickstarter, I'm starting off the music with that, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy that. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show.
It is nighttime in Toy World, and all is quiet. One little bear is still awake and so nervous that his stuffing is in knots. He notices you and leaps back in surprise. He says,
"Oh, thank you, Geppetto. I'm Detective Ruxby Bear of Toyburg PD. I don't know how you got in here, but you have to help me."
The scared toy beckons you closer.
"I was working on a case in Toyburg City that got me too close to the mayor, so I've been framed and put here."
Ruxby jumps back a little.
"You don't know where this is?"
A fuzzy friend laughs nervously.
"This is the corner. Toy World's most scariest prison, filled with killers, fanatics, and old villains of the Saturday morning wars."
Realizing that he doesn't have long here before the guards find him, Ruxby tells you,
"There's a group of investigators back in Toyburg who are collecting stories to expose the corrupt, celebrate the righteous, and get me out of here. Tales of the falsely accused and executed. Tales of old villains being used by cops to do their dirty work. And I'm sure that the last bad toy I caught, the Switcher, will lead me to the copycat that has been working in secret for months. I can't do anything from in here, but you can."
Our tiny furry friend takes out a notebook and bright button and pleads with you.
"Please, get my notes to the outside and to my friends. Help them raise the buttons to get the truth out in Toy World and that sick plaything behind bars. My friends have even promised to strike a deal with whoever wants to sell our yarns in their stores. For your buttons, my friends will send books, posters, shirts, and other works from their collections to help bring the real Toyburg out into the rays of Mr. Sun."
As he slips off to find his cell again, Ruxby says, with a shake in his voice,
"Last year might have put steel in my stuffing, but please hurry and help prove my innocence before I get put on the step. I've heard it changes a toy forever."
It's great to welcome back to the podcast, Brett Urin.
Hi, how
you doing, Brett? Yeah, you're the creator of Torso Bear, among other things. And we've talked twice before about this wonderful comic. Why don't you, since we're starting out, it's been a little while since you've been on the podcast, give a description of what Torso Bear is about.
Okay. Well, Torso Bear, the name is a little on the nose because it was originally a story, a short 8-pager in a Norwegian digital anthology called Otra, basically about young detective Ruxby Bear in an imaginary city called Toyburg. His first case, he finds a dismembered teddy bear body. No gore, naturally, it's just fluff in a lemonade rain-soaked alleyway. And from there on in, it span off into an anthology book. Various people's stories all centered around Ruxby and the city of Toyburg, based around that case, which is sort of the closest thing we could do with a Dahlia, Black Dahlia style murder in an environment where it was as close to a children's book as we could manage, or a kid's comic. Completely clean, no gore, sex, proper violence, anything like that. And, you know, quite a lot of the writers and artists seem to like that challenge.
So, okay, first volume, when did that come out?
That would have been late summer into early autumn 2014. Okay. Yeah.
And then the second volume, when did that hit the stands?
Well, that was October, November last year, 2015, yeah.
So pretty good. So, yeah, you're doing things on a regular basis. So obviously you've got a fan base going on by here, because the reason we're talking tonight is because you want to talk about an upcoming Kickstarter program project for this. Do you want to talk about what the response has been to Torso Bear and why you're getting ready to do a third one?
Yeah, I mean, totally. Since those two Kickstarters, we've found our way into Orbital Comics in London, the UK, and Coy's Comics in Michigan, in the United States, and various places, including Comixology. And I think overall, we've sold way above 550 copies in various formats of the books combined. I've had messages, one of which was from an ex-police officer, who emailed me out of the blue to say, after reading number one, that he was glad coming out of the service and back into civilian life, that someone out there understood that it was a difficult job, that it does things to you emotionally that are always difficult to pass, you know. And he was just glad to know that he wasn't on his own understanding that conflict, you know, and stuff like that. So it's been a really kind of popular response from readers and creators as well, some of whom in this third volume have been with us the entire series.
Great. Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. How were you aware of that? Was that something you were aware of when you were writing it, that this kind of thing happens to folks going down this path? Did you know somebody that had done that?
No. I'd come across people who used to be in the armed forces or were in the army. I had an ex-girlfriend whose brother and father as well were in the Royal Air Force, one of whom was retired from the force and one of whom was still active. So I kind of got a sense that, you know, it's a difficult thing to deal with emotionally sometimes, that kind of service, but nothing direct with the police force. So maybe that's where it came from.
Cool.
I hadn't thought about it until you just mentioned it.
Oh, wow. Because it's a lot of people don't understand that thing happens to folks in those circumstances. So
no, and it's fairly well documented now, you know, in social media and some areas of the news as well. But it's been kind of uncommon knowledge for many years, you know. So whether that trope is something that I unconsciously picked up when writing it, you know, there are a lot of people wanted to talk about that sort of thing, but it wasn't necessarily part of the mainstream comics sphere. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't actively discussed, perhaps.
Very good. Now, these tend to be trades rather than individual comics, but although you do have lots of individual stories within it, you found that to be a success as far as doing that kind of thing? You get to put the book out as a more complete volume than individual stories. Is that been something that you want to do that at the beginning? Did you kind of fall into that for, you know, financial reasons? How did you get to do that?
It was kind of out of necessity, really. I'd been before that I'd made an entire 200-page graphic novel. It was sci-fi African mythology called Kazimu, and it had taken up the best part of 6 years of my life.
Wow.
And on the side, or in between that and Torso Bear, I've been making a more British focused set of mini comics, just because I'd entered the workforce and I was in design agencies. Mm-hmm. So you don't always get the opportunity to spend a lot of spare time doing that sort of thing. Just about the time of Otra and doing the original Torso Bear story, we actually had our first daughter. Mm-hmm. So doing that, having a job as well, and that kind of responsibility, it sort of necessitated wanting to do a book, having the necessary sort of content and ideas, but not actually being able to execute it all myself, because obviously there were constraints on my time. Mm-hmm. So it was actually there's a panel in the first Torso Bear story of the Ruxpy's kid, little Wellington Bear, mm-hmm. laid back in bed. And I was actually inking that panel whilst my newborn girl was in the bassinet, sat on the sat on the sofa next to me. So, you know, it's life and comics and everything else is sort of intermingling at that point.
How about that? You can write what you know at that point. That's a
good thing. Yeah.
Which is a good thing. Now, volume one was just the volume one, right? Volume two was called All Stitched Up, if I remember correctly. Now, and of course, we haven't talked any about the characters in there. You've got you mentioned Ruxpy, Detective Ruxpy Bear, and it all takes place in Toyburg, which is the city, and all kinds of interesting little characters come in and out. Of people who are interacting with these things. And, you know, I always like to think that you're following in the Toy Story tradition, although you're going a little darker in the sense that these characters are more adult, shall we say, than Toy Story was, in the sense that they do some darker things or come across darker circumstances than you'd ever see in Toy Story.
Yeah, they do. That was part of the challenge in that, there are an awful lot, and I was talking at a convention with a couple of customers, one of whom was a parent bringing their kids around who'd never been to a convention before, because there are a lot of small shows springing up across the UK mm-hmm. in you know, places you'd never heard of, really, like Melksham and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But they were saying that they went into a comic shop, wanted a kid to get into it, and it couldn't really give them a mainstream Batman comic series. I mean, especially during Scott Snyder's run mm-hmm. with the Joker with his face skinned and mm-hmm. reattached mm-hmm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So how do you get kids into that? Mm-hmm. And then primarily, you know, a lot of creators are used to creating that dark material, but not necessarily in all ages stuff. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of worked that it was an appropriate challenge for creators to do dark stories, but not with a traditional set of tools, almost. So it was almost like a creative exercise for them. Those limits produce something quite unusual, like Ed Norton's story about executing a convict teddy bear by using a Hoover to suck his fluff out. Mm. It's not technically anything that you could say is inappropriate for kids, although perhaps it is. But yeah, I think when you're doing a series, and after the first one's success, we decided we did want to do more of it, you've got to raise the stakes. I mean, that happens in quite a lot of serials. I mean, if you continue them too long, like soap operas, the thing becomes ridiculous. But the Star Wars trilogy definitely set along that path. There are many classic franchises that have done that, started out or rather ended in a darker place than where they initially set out from.
Now, of course, you did the first one that was fresh and new. Second one, of course, you know, it probably wasn't quite as fresh and new, but you still had stories to tell. So now you've got a third volume in the works. What was it? How did the circumstances come that you wanted to do volume three? Was it because the volume two was so well received? Of course, you had one and two basically going over real big. Did you, you know, were these stories that you kind of kept in reserve? Are these new stories, new creators? What? How was volume three coming together?
Volume three is, all the scripts and basic layouts of the stories are there. If anything, some of them were in development as the second volume was winding up. If anything, it seems from the creator's perspective, there's a great as much as there are, you know, readers who really do enjoy it, I think the creative team, more than anything else, have been driving this forward. And not that it's out of my hands, but someone will message me, you know, just as I'm sending out pledge packages or something to that effect with a new idea. And it's something completely genius that deserves to be read. Mm-hmm. So I've almost got to play catch up with them and come up with a story. I never went into volume one thinking there was going to be a two or three, but things keep presenting themselves. Mm-hmm. There's a team or people that have worked on volume one and two who actually wanted to pitch in to do whether a miniseries or maybe a one-shot after this third volume is wrapped up, based all around the exploits of a band who play in a bar. So more of a music-themed, character story-based narrative rather than anything that has a particular crime story to it. So the world has opened up to people to almost tell their own stories with it.
Does that surprise you? You know, you generated toy, you know, the toy Torso Bear stuff in order to make it basically like a crime drama. But now you're seeing your child grow up and going in directions you probably never expected. What's that like for you? Do you kind of feel like, wow, I never dreamed that? Is it exciting for you? Is it a little scary? How does that work?
It is a little, it is a little scary. Just to think that something that I vaguely came up with in a slightly drunken bar joke ended up kind of spinning out from itself.
Wow.
It's kind of weird how that happens. The last two series I was involved with or making were put together on the back of a very hard fought and meticulously conceived idea. Mm-hmm. But this, that was just an offhand joke, seems to have kind of gotten away from itself. But maybe those loose parameters just allow people to put their own stamp on it, their own fingerprint. It's cool and scary at the same time. It definitely is. But now that Source Point, who we've been speaking to, want to get involved and distribute things, it might be nice once this third one is wrapped up to kind of see if other people want to have a crack or do something with the world. And then just act as editorial and distribution go between.
That'd be something. It'd be a different role for you, but your role's growing as far as the universe goes.
To some extent. I mean, it'd be nice to kind of take the pedal off the metal and let someone else, you know, prepare the work, and I'll go on to do a couple of other concepts that I've been toying with.
Are you going to like review stories? Like, well, this probably is the case in all these three volumes. You've probably looked over the story. Have you ever said to somebody, "Ooh, I don't think we should do that"?
There were a couple of occasions, like in Volume 2 for John Scriven's story Action Gal, where Action Man realizes he's been born the wrong toy and wants to be reshaped as an Action Gal. Because trans people and their situation, not just in the United States and UK, but all over the world, is something that's a very sensitive topic for many people for various different reasons. We wanted to make sure that the way the story was resolved was as unlikely to give any kind of negative or any kind of connotation either way by the end of it. It would be completely down to the reader. And me and Glenn must have bounced 20, 30 emails back with John, you know, refining that thing or bouncing ideas across just to get that right, because it had to be, you know.
That's good, because, you know, honestly, you want the message to get across. You don't want to stumble through the details and that distract away from the story you're trying to tell. So.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to not only do you want people to be distracted from the story by the concept, but you also don't want to give in anybody. I mean, considering we already had contact from a policeman about how much he identified with somebody, didn't want to do wrong by anybody in the situation that Action Gal was in to some extent, and misrepresent it in any way, I think, is when we came to it.
So volume 3 is coming out here very shortly as far as Kickstarter goes. Before we get into that, though, I want to talk about how do you get volumes 1 and 2 these days? Do they contact you? Is there a website they can go through? Is it like drive-through? How's this going to work? Is it out in Comixology? How do these things happen? How can people get 1 and 2?
At the moment, it's still up on our Comixy store, both in a digital and physical format. But you can go to torsobear.com, and the links to, you know, buy them physically and digitally are right at the top of the page. That will be changing in the next couple of months because Travis and the rest of the team at Source Point Press in the States have agreed to pick up all the books, including 3, once it's completed, and distribute them through their network to physical stores, and also, you know, ship some copies to me for distribution in the UK as well.
Very cool.
And they'll be taking over the digital rights for that. Cool. So it'll all be switching over, but that'll be, you know, if there's a change, we'll be posting that on the website.
Well, of course, you can always link to wherever you need to go as far
Absolutely, as and just pop the links on there at the top of the page.
So volume three. Do you have a title for volume three?
Yeah, it's called Back on the Blocks. which is a reference to Ruxby getting himself out of prison and you know, back on the police force and back on the streets of Toyburg. There is more to it than that, and there's definitely going to be a big shift in midway towards the end of the volume, which some people who've read more closely into volume two might be able to see a little coming, but we think it's going to be a huge change up. Otherwise, we wouldn't be making the book. But Back on the Blocks is as about as paper thin reference to the story as possible. And
okay.
There's a famous story that J.R. Tolkien hated the name of the third book his publisher chose, Return of the King, because it spoils the story, basically. Mm-hmm. It gives away the ending.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't want to do anything vaguely like that.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So which creators that have been in the previous two volumes are going to be in volume three are going to return?
Right, so we're talking Cy Dethan, Nick Wilkinson. They've come back for this one. I think they, more than anything else, they just enjoy doing stories to do with Snaplock, their character, which is, you know, completely understandable. The guy is really cool to look at and to read. He's really pulled something out of the hat for this one, I think, as well. We were trying to go tighter for the third volume just to resolve as many storylines as we can and fit it all into a kind of more direct narrative between everybody. And he's hit that nail on the head.
Cool.
We've got Frank Martin, whose other book, Modern Testament, is doing the rounds in the indie sphere at the moment. He's come back to write another one. Glenn, our co-editor, in between getting his crime one-shot, The Glory, out there, and more issues of Ultra, has managed to put together his final Stretcho Savage story. He's very married to that character and to resolving things for him. We've got a few new faces as well, mainly artists. So most of the returning staff are writers. Saoirse Towler, who did the beautiful watercolor work on Janus Hunkonen's volume one story, is returning for this volume. But we have new people like Yen Quach. She's been working with Al Davidson on some Vertigo books as a color assistant, among many things. But she's got a very painterly style, something that's more akin to, you know, a watercolor work herself. As for other new artists, I think Kieran Squires has hired a new colorist called Giuseppe. And who else made it in? I'm just trying to get a look at the list. It's never helpful when Word doesn't want to open on you. Charlie Hogg, who did some of Kieran's colouring last issue, is actually doing some full art this time for more of a prose story from Ed Norden, where it's told in almost a police report style manner, as if you're leafing through the folder. But what he's done is, because it's toy-based, everything's written and drawn, including mugshots and kind of evidence photos in crayon. Cool. So it's coming together really nicely.
Very good. Now, of course, as we mentioned earlier, this is going to be a Kickstarter coming up soon. Do you know when the Kickstarter is going to start?
Yeah, it's going to be from the 1st of September, so for the time of recording now, next Thursday.
Okay, very good. And that'll be going. And how long is it going to last, a month?
Yeah. It's going to be the standard for the month, and it allows us to do some fun things, like we're going to have a month-long vote as to what happens in one of Kieran Squire's stories in points of resolution. So it's all going to be almost choose-your-own story for backers. We're going to do our usual sketch and art rewards and prizes and things like that. And you know, doing those things doesn't lend itself to a short run of a week or 13 days or
Very true. Because, you know, the 30-day program seems to be the best way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Days. Everyone's just kind of nicely slipped into that kind of whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you and I were talking a little bit before we started to record about the whole notion of Diamond versus Kickstarter and stuff like that. And I had mentioned, I know people who have been refused by Diamond because of their making superhero books, which Diamond has said they basically only want to do things from the big five or whatever they are now. And they want to reject everybody else's superhero books. And we were talking about how insane that is, that, you know, comics are largely known for superhero things right now. And to sit there and just basically, you know, offhandedly just reject because it's a superhero book, I don't quite get that. And you were kind of baffled by that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I cannot help but agree. It's in a very strange practice. Mm-hmm. For you know, an industry where there's rumbles about or worries about decelerating sales in some quarters, although of course the big two have shown their market share go up mm-hmm. over the last couple of years, but I think that may be to do with an increased portion of a kind of closed net, as it mm-hmm. were, you know, bigger slice of the pie that remains, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Was it, you know, back in the 90s, something to do with, you know, obviously the holograms and collectors, you know, covers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But comics used to sell in the millions mm-hmm. per issue. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing reports of, you know, Harley Quinn off of the back of the Suicide Squad movie selling in the 300,000s. And that's a large amount mm-hmm. Is obviously a fraction of what it was.
Right.
So I'm not entirely sure if the monopoly of Diamond hasn't, by, you know, more tightly controlling how things are sold, where they're sold, and in what more manner and format. I mean, you don't see regular series on stands anymore. It's independent stores or chains, one of which closed recently, didn't it?
Yes.
Is it Hastings?
Yes, they closed recently. The whole thing was shut down. Yeah. And they were the biggest customer for Diamond, because they took in all these books and shipped them all over the country. So, you know, you don't hear much about that, the impact of that. But you've got to figure it's had some kind of impact because
all the books. Definitely. And maybe that has something to do with that restrictive kind of myopic view, has a lot to do with why customers and creators are kind of, well, if I'm not going to have my, you know, book picked up by these big guys, I better make my own inroads. Or, you know, if I'm going to buy something that's new, I've been reading about these characters that have been around for 60 years. I mean, they're cool characters, but, right. you know, I love comics and I want to read something else. Where do I go? Mm-hmm. And so Kickstarter, maybe in other places like it, have become like an informal, independent pre-order system.
Well, there are some people I know who don't go to stores anymore. They just go through Kickstarter and buy their comics that way because they say it's mostly very creative as opposed to, well, you know, the ongoing trumble from month to month where Batman's always got to get back to where he was before so that he can continue on should some other creative team have to come in and deal with him. So, but see, your book is an example of something different. You know, you don't have to, you know, you're talking about endings. You're talking about, you know, more than just middles and stuff like that, which is where a lot of comics go. You're talking about some characters are going to actually come to a conclusion of their storyline, which I'm not used to be honest. And I think that's going to help your series get the word out a lot about the fact that not everything's going to follow that way. Not everything's going to wrap up in volume 3, sounds like. And yet you're going to have some stuff go to a real interesting conclusion. So, you know, to me, that's what's exciting. I love reading stories that are very different. I just don't know where you're going to go with it. So, you know, Torso Bear is one of those great series. I think that it's going to be wonderful to read and to not have any idea what's going to happen next.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's kind of what we aim for. And talking to a lot of people who are doing Kickstarters this month as well in the UK scene, that's exactly why we're doing it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, doing an ending or doing something creative that hasn't been done before in quite that way has more stakes. There's more excitement as a reader. I'm more excited to read the books that my fellows are putting out than things that are necessarily seen as rote on the stands. Mm-hmm. I mean, I take my kids to the store to get like Bee and Puppy Cat or My Little Pony books, but mm-hmm. you know, that's written for her and you expect that to be an ongoing serial. But I mean, just think of any other forms of art. Mm-hmm. Like Breaking Bad on television mm-hmm. had such a massive response and there's a limited amount of it. Mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to get to that point where, say, you're into six seasons of The Walking Dead and people are starting to drift off, because it just continues with it just continues. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't, the stakes peter out the longer you know that somebody is going to remain safe. That's the same way with something like Game of Thrones, where you don't know if someone's going to make it through to another episode or quite how it's going to resolve itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is great. I mean, you know, I've read comics for a long, long time. And for me, it's a challenge to tell stories that we haven't read before. And so for me, you know, like your book and your series is just a great thing for me, because it's something I haven't read before. You know, even the Toy Story comparison sort of pales because you're doing other things. You know, there's other, you know, and I do have a question. I may as well get it out right now because I've been thinking about it the whole time. Okay, you're doing a series of stories on toys. Has anybody approached you about the possibility of putting these out as actual toys?
That would be a massive irony, wouldn't it?
Yes.
To do a satire on the nature of playtime and toys and someone approaching you to do merchandising. Mm-hmm. The fact that I've already done some kind of merchandising and the Kickstarter rewards for the past couple of campaigns have included a toy of Ruxby, it hasn't escaped me kind of how silly and kind of in a small way hypocritical that kind of is. You know, needs must. The art is one thing, and the actual making enough money to make the art is quite another. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody has quite approached for merchandising on a large scale yet. But part of the agreement with SourcePoint is that they're going to be able to market this thing for, you know, movies, video games, or whatever, whoever parties might be interested. Mm-hmm. So. Actually, the question you and me are both going to have to find out in the following years what exactly happens with it, if anything does.
Because it's interesting to me because, you know, animation, they just announced recently that Mouse Guard's being turned into an animated project. And I don't know exactly if that's a movie or I kind of forget right now. But the thing that interests me is that cartoons are kind of swinging back towards younger kids. And yet there are some that are way on the other side. You know, they're kind of, you should never let your kids look at. And I, you know, your book is kind of in the middle of there. Some of them are probably better for some younger kids than others, but you could always do a series and you could always put a little, you know, the little warnings that they do over here in the States and put on and say, you know, this program is not for a child under the age of 10 or something like that. You could always.
Yeah. I mean, we are talking about that because, as you say, some are fine, some fall in the middle. Whether our new publisher goes for a teen or kind of like, you know, slightly older children rating or something, it has been in discussion.
Mm.
For younger kids, definitely there's a lack of stuff out, or there seemed to have been a lack of stuff out there. But there's a show that I've been particularly enjoying with our little one at the moment, Steven Universe, which I kind of like avoided for a little while. But I'm quite surprised in how they managed to keep it in a younger person's kind of psychological, emotional environment, but managed to bring in questions about relationships and even some vague hints towards gender standings and fluidity, but not compromising in the children's show format at all, which is an incredibly difficult balance to, you know, to hit.
Yeah. I hear more and more people talking about Steven Universe and about how much they like it, and they're always telling me get to watch that because there's been so much going on, I just haven't had a chance to watch as many of the animated things as I would like. So I might have to check that out based on what you're saying, because I think that's there's a lot of good things going on that we can deal with. And of course, animation and comics were always places where people could deal with this situation.
Well, absolutely. You can make something incredibly intricate and new without having to spend up any more money than you would doing something regular with it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you try translating that into something like video games or movies, the costs kind of go up exponentially. So I think that's why, for the most part, cartoons or comics are just going to keep carrying on.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Because that's an important thing, I think, is for the industry moving on, you know, because as you were talking, the sales aren't what they used to be. And yet the industry continues to go. And I'm hoping, because it does the kinds of things you're talking about and the kind of things you do, that that'll keep the industry, you know, live and moving forward as time happens. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like the music industry. It's like physical album sales and iTunes sales versus what people pick up on streaming or through Bandcamp, and those things aren't necessarily or haven't till recently been included. I'd be really interested to see if someone did a survey of how many comics have sold through independent means or through Kickstarter, and how much that adds to the Diamond's totals, you know, and whether there has been a shrinkage or maybe there isn't, hasn't been as much of a shrinkage in sales, but it's just people have shifted.
I read an article where somebody was talking about that very thing, and they said that after Marvel, the number two publisher of comics was Kickstarter.
Incredible.
And that's to me is, you know, of course, there's debate about whether that's accurate or not. But, you know, the fact that we're even having this discussion tells you that this Kickstarter stuff is really an important part of the industry right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was puzzled when someone said, don't you think Kickstarter's rather done the other day? And I was like, well, no. Look, I mean, look at my Facebook notifications feed. It's full of people who are starting Kickstarters, who are backing them. You know, it's weird that you don't get to see what goes on at a store. You know, you assume that people are going and buying things. But I can literally see through my social media and emails people buying things, you know, and it's every day the same person backing several projects as well, like they're going shopping.
Yeah. It's just amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And I always say this, and one of these days I'll stop saying it, but I regret that Kickstarter hasn't been along or longer than it has been, because how many stories did we miss out before Kickstarter came around? You know, you had to go to DC, you had to go to Marvel, you had to go to these places, and you had to get them buying your concept, where now you don't have to. You can do these things on your own, just like you're doing, and great stuff's happening. And it makes me grieve when I think about how much great stuff we've missed as a result of not having Kickstarter sooner.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you could really give yourself the night sweats thinking about that kind of stuff. But I mean, that kind of attrition, you know, happens to all art as well. How many artists have been before it's been recently democratized to some extent, how many people have missed out? But that is balanced up by how many great things we're getting to have now that wouldn't have had the slightest bit of a chance. I mean, Torta Bear was summarily rejected by Diamond on the basis that it was an unpopular format. The anthology format was unpopular. But then we've seen Broken Frontier and Once Upon a Time Machine. That one, you know, a couple of friends of mine were involved with. That was picked up by Dark Horse, you know, after the Kickstarter. So, and now I'm getting picked up by Source Point. So it's just a different avenue to getting going.
Thank goodness. Glad it's there. I'm glad you're getting to do that too. Now, once again, September 1 is when Torso Bear Volume 3 is going to begin as a Kickstarter project on there.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure to, if you go to Kickstarter.com, be sure to look for Torso Bear, and you'll probably see 1 and 2 out there too when you do that. But Volume 3 will start, and it'll end on what, September 30?
The end of September is when it will finish up. For anybody who's never been into the book before, you can add the first two volumes to your pledge for an extra $10. Digital price is $6.50, hard copy price $20, and you'll be helping out a bunch of creators who are trying to make it in the industry and kind of come up through the different way, like we've been discussing. You know, there are people who are more established, but there are people who really want to get a foothold, and we want to help them do that.
Right, exactly. Now, of course, got to ask, should this be successful? Let's say on September 30, you've already, you know, you've gotten your money, the money together, and all these good things are going. Do you have an estimate as to when Volume 3 will be available?
We're aiming for pretty much what we did last year, which was end of October, beginning of November. That might be a little tight. So we were going to say on the outside, in December is probably when it's going to be on the outside coming out, because we've got to have copies shipped over from the US from Source Point.
Just in time for the holidays.
Yeah.
It's always a perfect time.
I hope it'll be a nice present for some people. It's been pretty much, I kind of got the demand partway through volume two from my wife, my other half, to please for once have a happy ending to one of your books. And I won't say too much, but I hope everybody and Ruxby has a happy holidays.
Very good. Are there other things you're working on, Brad, besides Torso Bear? Does that kind of keep you busy these days?
It does pretty much keep me busy, because the project management and a few personal things have kind of made sure that that's my sole project for the moment. I do have a couple more issues of The Veil, which is the UK kind of based project that I want to get out, if only because some of my regular readers who have read that as well have kind of been demanding it from me. Mm-hmm. But because they're only 12 pages a piece, they're sort of a mini series, I can finish those two out quite nicely. I had been batting around a concept for the Garbage Men of Time, called the No Men, that I want to develop. Yeah, and there was originally going to be, I think I'm going to repurpose it, going to be a Batman story that I was going to pitch about what would happen if Batman tried to take on a hacker group like Anonymous, because, you can't punch the internet. So what does Batman do in that situation? But I think what we're going to do is just to a certain extent, like Mark Miller did, where obviously he set up his story, What If Batman Was the Joker? We're going to kind of pitch it in as a different superhero and kind of do that. So that needs a little more development, but, it'll be nice to play around with these things.
Well, I'd like to see that. That sounds like an interesting story, because it's out of Batman's general, range of doing things. So that sounds like great.
Absolutely. I always said I probably wouldn't do a superhero story because other people are doing them. They've done them. But then the concept arrived, and we've got to try and give that a go and do something with it. Definitely.
We'll have to keep in touch, because I want to hear that when it comes out. I'll be able to read that story.
Don't worry. I'll let everybody know.
Definitely. Brett, great stuff as always. And looking forward to Torso Bear Volume 3. What's the title of a 3 again?
Back on the Blocks.
Okay. Yeah. So go to Kickstarter.com and look up Torso Bear, and Back on the Blocks will be up there. And be sure to get in there and support, because we want to see more of this good stuff. So please keep it up, Brett, and we'll talk again, I'm sure, again in the future sometime.
Yeah, I'd love to. But it's always great talking to you, Wayne. It really is.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another interview with a great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.